Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange new signals and to seek out new stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before. Well, hello, friends and listeners, and welcome again to another edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. We have a jam program today, as well as, well, some information about us here at PCJ. We don't usually talk about PCJ on the program very much, but today we are making an exception with an announcement of something special that many of you, I think, will enjoy. But first, actually, let's begin with Trump's war against the media. Now, you may have heard a while ago, Donald Trump, the U.S. president, called news organizations like the New York Times, CNN, and BBC, among others, as being fake media and fake news. Well, it seems that he is the only president actually to be at war against the media. Now, what is exactly going on? Because even people who normally had access to the White House press briefings have now been kept out. Well, Zoe Daniels from the ABC reports next from Washington on this subject.
Mr. President,
why is the president picking a fight?
The political pecking order has changed. And in a White House that came to power with a promise to shake up the DC establishment, the media dynamic is also shifting.
Oh, yeah, no, you certainly have that. I mean, if you look at Sean Spicer's press conferences, he's bypassing that front row of journalists who traditionally got the first questions and going to conservative organizations. The Daily Signal has a reporter in the press briefing room, for instance, who gets called on. The president himself, during his meetings with world leaders, bypassed the traditional press and went right to other outlets. So there's definitely a different dynamic between the press and the White House.
Robert Louis, the editor-in-chief at conservative news organization The Daily Signal.
Well, I think you have a president who is not afraid to call out journalists directly or more broadly for things that he sees as stories that have been misreported or stories that aren't accurately reported. And I think that he's more aggressive, and his press secretary certainly is, in naming names and taking issue.
And you think that's a good thing?
Well, look, I mean, we live in a day and age where you have the ability to do that through Twitter and Facebook. I mean, presidents in the past didn't necessarily have a platform where they could go directly to the American people and, in a way, compete directly with the media. Donald Trump has built a sizable following in which he's able to do that. I think the press should still hold anybody in government accountable for their actions. I mean, that's what we do at the Daily Signal, and I think journalists should be doing that. But I don't think it's harmful to have that back and forth.
Do you think it's undermining trust in the press?
I certainly do think it is. There's no doubt if you look at the American public's view of the press, they're not held in high regard as they were, say, during the Watergate era, when you had another press corps that was challenging the Nixon administration and the president himself. So, I think that has resulted in a deterioration. But I also think that that's not just on Donald Trump's part. I think that there have been actions that the media has taken, the packed journalism mentality where everybody chases the same story, or certain stories that they blow out of proportion that the American public just doesn't think deserve as much attention as they have. So there's a disconnect there as well.
It's just one of the organizations that's seen its fortunes change under the new administration, which not only welcomes conservative media, but also allows access to small-scale, often web-based organizations that now have frontline access.
As well, can you talk a little bit about what First Lady Melania Trump does for the country?
Now that's what I call a nice question.
Kyle Mazza runs his own web-based news channel. He's the sole staff member.
Well, I started my news station at 8, and I'm now 19, and it was always a passion for journalism that I had. I never watched cartoons. I always watched news shows, and it's just the energy, the passion of news reporting, the different events, the different press conferences. It's all very special.
His approach is deliberately different to that of the mainstream press and markedly less combative.
It's an honor that the president embrace my question. It's an honor that Sean Spicer allowed me the opportunity to speak. And every time I get that chance, it's very rewarding. And what I do is I try to ask questions that are not in the mainstream, that are not in the general newscasts. So I might ask about roads and bridges or something to that effect that is not in the spotlight of the most traditional newscasts, because I want to be unique. I want to be different. And it's a rewarding experience, as I said, to do what we do. And it's a rewarding experience just to be a part of it.
Donald Trump has consistently used the media as a tool, but in different ways. First, he capitalised on free round-the-clock mainstream media coverage and then bypassed it, turning to Twitter to control the national conversation. Now his White House is picking and choosing who to favour, which is not unusual for a president.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
Calling the mainstream press the enemy of the people, however, is a step further.
And that was Zoe Daniels reporting for the ABC from Washington. Now, staying with fake media and fake news. Well, it's not exactly fake, actually. You can call it propaganda. Now, of course, many people are familiar with propaganda. Sometimes it's just their own view, who's ever putting out the story, of a particular story. Sometimes, of course, news items are created to give, well, a false image of what is really going on. Now, just recently, Chinese political leaders from around the country met in Beijing. This is, of course, something that they do once a year. If you've listened to past editions of Media Network Plus, usually around March and February, we always report on something about the National People's Congress in Beijing. This time, however, it seems that the propaganda agencies were working overtime, more than usual, to convince both domestic and foreign audiences about the legitimacy of the parliament, which is, of course, at the Great Hall of the People. But sadly, it's becoming tougher and tougher. Of course, with the, you know, access to information that Chinese people have now, they can get alternative news points. Bill Birtles reports from Beijing.
It's the biggest day of the year for China's government. In a few hours' time, 3,000 delegates will file into the Great Hall of the People. Picture the scene. Hundreds of delegates in bright traditional clothing, hundreds of uniformed military chiefs, in amongst thousands of politicians from across this vast country. Add to that thousands of journalists, the vast bulk of them from China's state-owned media, and of course, thousands of military police keeping order as all this unfolds around Tiananmen Square. It's quite the ceremony, and China's government is keen to stress this is serious business. In the lead-up, China's state media arms have been pumping out propaganda for overseas social media users like this.
The National People's Congress is China's top legislature, or the parliament. Every year in March, around 3,000 elected lawmakers from across the country gather at the Great Hall of the People in the heart of Beijing for the annual session. Lawmakers come from all walks of life and represent many ethnic groups.
And this year, they're even targeting Australian audiences. This past week, the state propaganda organ Xinhua put out a curious interview with an Australian uni student who was filmed holding a book by President Xi Jinping as she spoke.
I'm Charlotte and I'm studying Chinese and education at UNSW. China and Australia are now so connected. Australia has China as their number one trading partner, and China is becoming so much more of a powerful, important world power. So I definitely think, especially for me studying Chinese, it's definitely going to affect me. Their decisions regarding whatever will eventually affect me because I do hope to study and maybe even work in China one day. So that will affect me as a foreigner coming into China.
There's plenty of reasons why China's government feels the need to promote this annual meeting. Western media reports often refer to China's rubber stamp parliament. That's because two-thirds of the 3,000 delegates are from the Communist Party, and the remainder represent groups controlled by the party. So there's not much to debate, and any real policy work has well and truly been done by the leaders in advance. A concurrent meeting of a further 2,000 citizen delegates is supposed to generate policy ideas for the lawmakers. But with a heavily controlled and censored media, only ideas that the party leaders like see the light of day. Despite all this, the world's media goes along to get two main nuggets of information: how much China is spending on its ever-growing military, and how much the economy is expected to grow in the next year. Anything else that helps the outside world better understand where China is heading is a bonus. This year we're watching for talk about globalization amidst the protectionist wave sweeping parts of the US and Europe. The other main opportunity reporters want is to ask officials some questions. It's rare in China to ask politicians questions. The president, Xi Jinping, for example, he doesn't do interviews or press conferences. He makes Donald Trump's attacks on the US media look tame by comparison. But the number two leader, Li Keqiang, he does do press conferences, one per year.
Well, you did raise a very big question, but it would be absolutely impossible for me to side with a view that we are not able to meet our major economic development target for this year.
The Chinese government uses it to show that it's being transparent. But there's a catch. Foreign reporters have to apply to ask a question well in advance, and they have to submit the wording of the question. And you guessed it, if you want to ask the Premier anything sensitive, for example, why the government is locking up human rights lawyers, or how the government justifies blocking 1.3 billion people from accessing Google, chances are you won't be allowed to. Some of the veteran reporters here talk of being approached by officials to ask questions about the economy. And when they say they'd rather inquire about the government's policies in Tibet, they're told that's not allowed. So it's very much an exercise in China's leaders appearing to be accountable, while still ensuring they don't have to answer tough questions. But for reporters used to a very opaque and restrictive environment, it's better than nothing. And it's a good insight into the absolute obsession with control that's at the heart of the Communist Party, running Asia's rising superpower.
And that was Bill Birtles reporting for the ABC from Beijing on the recently held National People's Congress, where thousands of delegates from around the country gather at the Great Hall of the People to discuss things. Yes, I've actually covered these things before in the past. And, well, as they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corey 105, it is speeded to Toto Journal.
Speed 220, Corey 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
And before we continue, actually, I just want to thank the number of people that wrote me. Actually, it's quite a few that wrote me about the article that I recently wrote in the Spectrum Monitor concerning Radio Australia and HF in the Pacific. Thank you very much. Something that we don't do on the program very much is talk about PCJ, and what is going on here. But today we're going to break away from that. You may have heard me mention something about it on last week's program. Now, for those who are regular listeners to the Happy Station Show and this program, will know that we have acquired a vast collection of Happy Station material and Radio Netherlands material. Some of it going back to the late 1920s, before it was called Radio Netherlands, when it was Philips Radio PCJ. And, of course, material from the Radio Netherlands period, from the late 40s all the way to the early 90s. Now, we've had this stuff now for almost 1 year. And many people have been asking us, well, what we're intending to do with it. And it actually took us some time to figure out how we're going to be releasing all this material. Now, the first thing, of course, that I want to mention is, yes, you'll be able to download the files, but you have to pay. Now, you don't have to pay for individual files, because that would be kind of silly, I think. But instead, what we've done is we've set up a special website. Now, not too long ago, Peter Anthony Holder, host of the Stuff File program, put me onto a site called Patreon. And you spell that P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon. And if you become a patron at Patreon, at like $3, and if you want to put more, that's actually up to you, then you will be able to download all the historic Radio Netherlands programs and Happy Station shows that, well, have not been heard since they were originally broadcast. There's also a wealth of material as well that will be available there as well. So, for example, if we do a very recent interview here on Media Network Plus or Happy Station, of course, we will edit the interview down for time, but the unedited version of the interview will be made available to those who are Patreons. So, you will have some input into the show. Now, you're saying to yourself, well, wait a minute. What do I get out of this? Well, like I said, if you're a patron at Patreon for the Happy Station Show and PCJ Radio International, you will have access to rare Happy Station shows. Many of these have not been heard since they were broadcast. The next thing is songs recorded by Tom Meyer, the second host of Happy Station that he recorded between 1969 and 1992. Also, new Happy Station material. People will also be getting, for the first time ever, Tom Meyer's book, Unreliable Recollections. And we're going to be issuing those chapter by chapter very, very soon. Now, we also going to have book giveaways and lucky draws every month starting in April. That's right, every month starting in April, a lucky draw. Now, the other thing, of course, that I want to mention on this is we put a goal of $200. Now, if we reach the goal of $200, PCJ Radio International will produce a special two-hour program for broadcast on shortwave. You will also have access to inside information on what's going on, not just with us, but also in the media in general, and publications that are usually not made public. But if you're a patron at Patreon, we will, you know, give you access to that. Now, just to give you a little sampling of the kind of thing you can hear if you're a patron, and I should mention, by the way, that not all the material you have to pay for, because at our Patreon page, there's going to be a lot of stuff that will be free of charge, samples of programs, for example. But if you want to hear the full program, you have to become a patron. It's very easy, and it's going to be a lot of fun, because the money that we raise from this, it's a bit like crowdfunding, actually helps us to digitize the entire collection. That's right, because it's not cheap to do. It isn't cheap to do. But anyway, let's now have a little sampling of some of the things that are either there now and some things that are coming up very soon for patrons.
Well, of course, this is a special show. The first show in 1970, and the first show being presented by little me. A new decade, a new voice, and as you undoubtedly heard at the beginning of the program, a new signature tune at the beginning of this happy station. On this typical September Sunday, we've once again left the studios in Hilversum to go out to a wonderful location for an extra live special.
Het is weer woensdag en dat betekent carousel.
To help me to make other people smile, 215013227. All you have to do is just...
And here is Teddy Skolten, well-known Dutch light music singer, to introduce the program.
Hello. Shall we listen to some more Dutch music?
Hello, hello, everybody everywhere, ladies and gentlemen, friends and listeners, boys and girls, everyone in the shortwave world, for that is our world. This is the happy station of Radio Nederland Hilversum in Holland, as every Sunday at this time.
The place, the Easter Bunny's Palace. The time, a few days before Easter.
This is my kind of town, this Hilversum.
Yes, sir, right.
My kind of town, this Hilversum. My kind of people, too.
Uh-huh.
People who smile at you.
And that, of course, is just a small sampling of the material that patrons will have access to. Now, we began that little montage with the first ever Happy Station show that Tom Meyer recorded. Now, on that date, on January the 4th, 1970, there were four editions, of course, that went out. And we have all four. And the first one that he did, the first transmission, is actually up there right now. Other things that are available are some interviews that Tom Meyer has done over the years. And like I said, even things that are not Radio Netherlands connected. David Monson, who passed away a few years ago, we interviewed on the program. And he also did some PCJ programming about 5 years ago. Back in the 1980s, he recorded an album made up of monologues for the program that he was doing, Brussels Calling, out of Belgian radio. And that LP that was released in the 1980s, only a few were actually pressed, and we have all the recordings from it, so we're actually going to be releasing those. Now, to become a patron at Patreon, it's very easy. Visit our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Once again, www.patreon.com/PCJ Radio. And Patreon is spelt P-A-T-R-E-O-N. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And when you open up the page, you'll see a little promo video there. And on the right side, become a Patreon, a patron. That's all you have to do. And there's different choices. In fact, there's two. One is all the information is there. I don't want to get into too much of it because we don't actually have enough time on the program. But those who are patrons will get special things. Like I said, we have some albums and some singles, 45 singles, that we're going to have lucky drawings every month for those who are patrons. And if we reach our goal of 200, PCJ Radio International will produce a special show for shortwave for all of you. So become a patron today at Patreon for PCJ Radio International. All righty then. It's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through March 11th. Normal at all latitudes, but minor to moderate MUF depressions and degradations are expected in high latitude regions. From Space Weather South Africa through March 11th, magnetic conditions unsettled to quiet, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through March 12th, solar activity to remain very low, with no sunspots on the current disk and none forecast to return from the far side. RSGB says, as we are now into March, users of propagation prediction software like VOA Cap and VOA Prop should be using the new smoothed sunspot number of 28. ARRL predicts the solar cycle will probably reach minimum in 2020. From FK Janda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on March 10th, 11th, 13th, 15th, and 25th. Quiet on March 12th, 14th, and 26th. Quiet to active on March 16th, 18th, 19th, 23rd, and 27th. Active to disturbed on March 17th and 28th. Quiet to unsettled March 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 24th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field active on March 17th, 23rd, and April 1st. G1 minor storm conditions are likely on March 16th, 30th, and 31st, with ANK indices of 20 and 5. G2 moderate conditions likely March 28th and 29th, peaking at 30 and 6. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on March 11th to 14th, and 25th to 27th. Solar flux peaking at 78. March 18th to 23rd. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting all week around Cabo Verde off the west coast of Africa, March 9th and 10th off Yemen and Oman, March 10th, 11th, 13th, and 14th along the coast of Namibia, March 11th to 13th off Western Australia, March 12th to 14th off Baja California and the southern coast of Mexico, March 12th and 13th, west of Luzon and in the Gulf of Thailand. March 13th, east of Vietnam. March 14th, south of Vietnam.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. Once again, become a patron at Patreon for PCJ Radio International. Patreon.com/PCJ Radio. There's a lot of interesting stuff that's there now, and a lot more is coming its way. You'll find all the information there, how to become a patron. If you want to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying 73 and 88 to the ladies.